time. This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And joining us is Eric Williams from ESPN.com, covers the Chargers. Looking forward to seeing him tonight. And so I've been saying this now for probably 2 months, and I don't know if I'm far off at all. I just look at the Chargers as I think the team to beat in the AFC West. Is that what the team looks like to you?
Yeah, John, and thanks for having me. Look forward to seeing you as well. I do think that they're the team to beat when you look at how they're built in terms of the offense and defense, the depth that they have. I think they have the best quarterback in the division in Phillip Rivers. And then I think you look at the rest of the division, there's a lot of, you know, transition. Oakland, John Gruden has to establish a culture, has to add more playmakers on defense, and has to fix Derek Carr based on what we saw last year. I think Chiefs, new offensive coordinator, new quarterback, and Patrick Mahomes, it might take them a little bit of time to kind of figure out what works best for him. And then defensively, they're getting a little bit older. And then I think Denver Broncos, kind of the same thing, new quarterback. In Case Keenum has to learn the offense, new offensive coordinator. They fired Mike McCoy halfway through the season last year, and then an aging defense. And so I think when you look at just the continuity that the Chargers have, it's why a lot of people around the country are picking them to win the division.
Well, and also, you look at last year, and the AFC, particularly last year, and it's probably the same way this year, is very thin for quality teams. I mean, when you think that Tennessee and Buffalo made the playoffs, and with 9-win seasons and negative point differential, I mean, that tells me there's 4 playoff teams. And maybe, Kansas City was a playoff team last year, but I think they've taken a step back. And so that opens the door for a team that started 0-4 and finished 9-3, like the Chargers.
Yeah, you know, a team that had a lot of momentum going into the end of last year. I think they felt like if they had got to the playoffs, they maybe could have won a game or two, because they're relatively healthy, too, at the end of the season. But they don't get in. And you mentioned it. I think the AFC is a little bit weaker when you look at some of the teams at the NFC, probably a little more stacked. And so, yeah, that kind of works to the Chargers' benefit. But they have to start off better than they did last year. You can't get into a hole 0-4 and then have to dig your way out and expect to get in the playoffs. So I think that's going to be key for this team, is getting off to a fast start.
Of course, you mentioned the word relatively healthy. I don't know. In the last 2 years, the Chargers and the Ravens, I thought, have been the two most injured teams in football. What do you think has happened that's caused so many injuries? And he even starts out this year. Hunter Henry's done for the season. Jason Verrett's done for the season. What is it with the injury bug for the last 2 years with this team?
Yeah, I think the injury issue was a concern for them in 2015 and 2016, no doubt. They lost a lot of frontline players, and it was one of the reasons why they struggled to compete on a week-to-week basis. A lot was placed on Phillip Rivers' shoulders to kind of not only carry the offense but carry the team. I thought last year Lynn did a pretty good job of kind of creating an atmosphere and a conditioning program early in the offseason, of holding the guys accountable and kind of giving them the rest that they needed to last through a duration of the season. But, yeah, you mentioned it. Jason Verrett, you know, obviously has the Achilles tear. He's out for third straight year. Hunter Henry had the torn ACL early in the offseason in May. Other than that, though, they've been relatively healthy. And, they had some nicks and bruises, which you're going to have during camp. Trevor Williams has an ankle issue. He won't play on Saturday. Joey Bosa has a foot injury, and he won't play as well. They want to make sure they can get him to week one. So I don't know if you can really pinpoint, one thing in terms of the injury bug, but I know it's one thing that they've thought about in terms of a comprehensive program to try to lessen the injuries. And I do think if you look at the end of last year, most of their frontline players were healthy and available at the end of the year.
No question. So that's going to be interesting. What has Tom Telesco, the general manager, done right in trying to rebuild this team over the last several years?
I think he's done a pretty good job of identifying players that can come in and make an impact. And I think it started really with Melvin Gordon, getting that workhorse running back to kind of complement Phillip Rivers. Keenan Allen was a great third-round pick early in his tenure. Keenan just has had trouble staying healthy, but he had his first 16-game season last year, and I think you kind of see what Keenan Allen can do in terms of, being an engine for an offense if he's fully healthy. On the defensive side of the football, I think he did a great job of just kind of you know, picking the guy in front of him that was the best player, and that was Joey Bosa a couple of years ago. And we've seen what Joey Bosa has meant to this defense. You add in with Ingram, you probably had the best pass rushing tandem in the league. And they're trying to create what Telesco had when he was working with Bill Polian when he was with the Colts. You know, you had Mathis and Freeney, so you're able to generate that pass rush. You have Peyton Manning at quarterback. You're going to get ahead of teams more often, and then you can kind of heat up the pass rush to close out the deal. I think you have a similar setup here with Phillip Rivers at the controls offensively. Bosa and Ingram are able to generate pass rush, and then you have a pretty good secondary backing him up, led by Casey Hayward. So a complete defense, gave up just 17 points a game last year, which was third best in the league, and then a kind of offense that can put points on the board against any defense in the league.
Well, the one thing I like about Tom is like he usually hits on two or three starters in the draft each year, mm-hmm. and then he's made some strategically brilliant moves as far as free agency. I mean, the Casey Hayward move was absolutely sensational.
Yeah, it was weird that the Packers didn't want him back because of his versatility. I mean, he was a nickel corner for them. The Chargers had scouted him when he came out of the draft out of Vanderbilt and felt like he could play outside, and they're able to get him, you know, for 3 years. I think it was $15 million that they initially signed him for. So a good deal for what essentially is a shutdown corner. That's what he developed in for this team. Then they signed him to the extension, you know, still relatively young. But he kind of fits the culture of this team, kind of no nonsense. He's not a guy that's going to talk a lot of trash. He's dedicated to the team and the organization and working hard, and it really sets a good example for their younger players. So, yeah, he was a steal to get in free agency a couple of years ago.
Well, I know that one of the strengths of the team, I mean, particularly the defensive line, but the secondary is good too. I mean, how good is it going to be even though they aren't going to have a good corner in Jason Verrett?
Yeah. Yeah. No, if they would have had Jason, I think that would have been a bonus. But I think they were kind of moving forward with the thought that they potentially couldn't have him just because of the injury history in his past. They're calling themselves the Jack Boys because they're robbing the football. So we'll see if that nickname sticks. It's essentially the same scheme that Gus.
Well, wait, what's the nickname again?
They're called the Jack Boys. What do you
okay.
mean? Okay. Does that pass the sniff test for you, John?
No, it's the Jack Boys?
The Jack Boys. Yeah, I guess they got it from Adrian McDonald, who played at the University of Houston. I think they went by a similar name there. I think Adrian McDonald was the all-time interceptions leader for the University of Houston. So they adopted that a couple years ago, and that's what they're calling themselves.
Wow, it's a weird one because I don't think anybody understands what it means.
Yeah, you know, I think if you're of a certain age, maybe those millennials are probably more related to it than somebody like you and I that are a little bit older.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, Jack Boys, basically you're robbing the football from the other team, so that's the nickname.
Okay.
But the scheme is what Seattle basically ran, is Seattle Cover 3. You know, they had longer corners, bigger corners with Richard Sherman, Brandon Browner. They do it with smaller corners, Casey Hayward, Trevor Williams, but they still are in press coverage about 70% of the time. They obviously don't have an Earl Thomas, a rangy center fielder that can kind of patrol the back end. Gio Dye is going to be that guy, and then Derwin James is going to be their camp chancellor, a guy that can play physical close to the line of scrimmage and has pretty good ball skills. They had 40 interceptions over the last 2 years, that's second only to the Patriots, so they do a pretty good job of taking the ball away. And then they're really helped by that pass rush, Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram. They know they don't have to cover for very long, and they can take a lot of chance in the back end.
And, of course, Phillip Rivers is still, I don't think he gets the total recognition for what a good quarterback he is.
Yeah, you know, I think with Phillip, you're still looking for that signature moment. You know, 4-5 in the playoffs. He's been to one AFC championship game. They lost to the Patriots. That's the game, of course, he played with a torn ACL and toughed it out. You know, obviously one of the toughest players in the league, hasn't missed a game in over a decade. But I think you're still looking for that moment where he either takes him to a Super Bowl, wins a Super Bowl, or is a league MVP to kind of cement his status as a Hall of Famer. But certainly when you look at the stats, he's in top 10 in passing, top 10 in passing touchdowns, and he's only going to continue to move up the list as he continues to play.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Melvin Gordon is a really good running back.
Yeah, I think the thing with Melvin Gordon is just kind of avoiding those nicks and bruises that, you know, forces him to miss a game here, a game there. A hard runner. And I think the key for Melvin is getting Mike Pouncey from the Miami Dolphins in free agency. They like the fact that Pouncey can kind of get out in space and get to the second level of the defense and really offer a clear picture in terms of Melvin where he needs to run the football. So I think you're going to see a lot of counters, a lot of traps, where the hole is declared quickly, and all he has to do is run off Pouncey's backside and get to the second level. So I think that's going to be key. You know, Melvin, I think, averaged 3.8 yards per carry. I think they'd like to see that up a little more.
How good is this offensive line? Because it's obviously, for the last couple of years, been a work in progress, either through the draft or free agency.
Yeah, I think that's one of the question marks, John, is are they going to be able to come together and be a cohesive unit? They did a pretty good job last year. They gave up just 18 sacks, which was fewest in the league. They have Russell Okung, who, of course, people in Seattle are familiar with, and, you know, was up there drafted, I think, in 2011, or maybe it was 2010, first-round pick.
2010,
Okung,
yeah.
Okung has done a nice job of solidifying their left tackle position and played at a Pro Bowl level last year and went to the Pro Bowl. But I think really it's those guard spots where they have the two young guys, Dan Feeney, who they drafted in the third round last year, is played pretty well. But they haven't been able to get Forrest Lamp on the field. You know, he suffered an ACL knee injury on the fourth day of training camp last year, and he still hasn't been a full participant in camp. So right now you're looking at Michael Schofield at right guard, Joe Barksdale at right tackle. So I think those guard spots are really the question marks for this team right now, if those young guys can kind of grow and get better, you know, with Pouncey in the middle as the anchor.
And how is the rotation at the wide receiver position?
Yeah, I think they have maybe the best wide receiver group in the NFL. You know, I already mentioned Keenan Allen, who had over 100 catches last year, Pro Bowl player. Their number two is Tyrell Williams, who people in the Northwest might be familiar with, played at Western Oregon, was an undrafted rookie, and their deep threat kind of works well as a complementary piece with Keenan Allen. The number three receiver is Travis Benjamin. Again, another speed receiver that's able to create mismatches. And your fourth receiver is Mike Williams, the first-round pick last year, who, of course, had to deal with his share of injuries, both back and knee issues, missed six games last year. But this year, I think he's been kind of the highlight player in camp, seems to make a catch or two every practice. And they're counting on him to be a productive player because, you know, as we talked about, they don't have Hunter Henry at tight end, so Mike Williams will run some of those similar routes on third down in the red zone for this team. So very deep at receiver. They also have Artavis Scott, who played at Clemson with Mike Williams, who's competing for a spot at the back end of the roster.
And then finally, tight end. Of course, you mentioned Hunter Henry having the ACL. No Antonio Gates at the moment. Are they good enough at tight end?
No, they are not good enough at tight end, John.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
There. Virgil Green is the number one right now, but he's more of a run blocking tight end. He'll catch some passes and play action, but they're still looking for that number two tight end. Right now it's Sean Culkin, who was on the roster last year, mostly in the practice squad, but played a couple games out of Missouri. He's looked better at times the last couple practices and had a couple catches against the Cardinals last week. After that, they really have nobody. And I think ultimately, they're going to need to bring Gates in to kind of solidify that group and give Rivers back his security blanket. They're still in negotiations with Gates representation, so there's still a possibility that he will come back. You know, you're talking about price, and are they willing to raise the price a little bit to bring somebody like Gates back? And, of course, they're also dealing with the fact that they told Gates they wanted to move on from him at the combine in February. Now they had to kind of go groveling back because they need him now that Henry is out.
Well, Eric, I'm looking forward to seeing you tonight at the game. It should be an interesting one. You know, one playoff team, I think, in the Chargers. We'll see if Seattle can match up and be a playoff team again, but it should be a good one.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it, John. Thanks for having me, and I'll see you in a couple hours.
All right, sounds good. Eric Williams from ESPN.com. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Warren in Seattle. Hey, Warren.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Going great.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear him. First time, long time. You know, I just want to say I appreciate the Santa Clara call out for Randy Winn earlier. It's my alma mater, so I haven't heard that.
There you go.
That's college in a long time. So I just want to talk some Mariners with you. You know, okay. I've been going through an existential crisis here.
So have they.
Team's going to turn it around come the All-Star break. You know, they kind of looked like they were on downturn, wasn't too worried. And now, you know, obviously looks like a dumpster fire. And not sure where the blame's to go. Been looking at Scott Service a lot, pretty critically. You know, I really like what Jerry DePoto's done, trying to bring in players that are going to contribute with the pieces that he had to move. But obviously something's not working. Something's not right. And it's been pretty frustrating
to watch. I think that you can see where, I mean, Jerry, I thought, and I think both guys deserve the, you know, extensions. But where the problem, I think, comes down to is that, the offense has, I think, been the biggest disappointment. And particularly, you go from like June 1st, you know, and they went through that one stretch until like about a 7 or 8 game period where they were scoring 2.8 runs a game. And, you know, again, Robinson Cano's suspension certainly hurt. I mean, they went from 4-6 to 4 runs a game once they started with that suspension, and then everything kind of went down. I mean, Gene Segura hit a tough stretch. Mitch Haniger hit a tough stretch. You know, D. Gordon wasn't getting on base. Ryan Healy wasn't
Kyle
getting on
Seager's
base.
Also not contributing like he typically does.
I mean, it's just, you know, and then, you know, Zanino is starting to hit a little bit better, but still, he goes through a bad stretch. So everybody was going through a bad stretch. And, you know, what you look at, and again, this is why I always kind of go back to the numbers, because they don't lie. And, you know, when this team was winning, I mean, it was like, you know, at the best, a plus 23, 24 in the run differential, which really should be more of an 83, 84 win team. But here they were, 25 games above 500. And I think that, you know, eventually it caught up to them. And then what ends up happening, the close games that they were winning, they started to lose now, the close games, because now the margin of error was so much tighter. Because now they couldn't, the pitching would give up 2-3 runs and they'd still lose the game because they weren't getting the hitting. And so, really, I think the biggest disappointment has been the hitting. And that's why I thought the Ben Gamble move was not right. Because, hey, it's great to have, Heredia out there fielding, but they needed the hitting. And, Gamble's a better hitter. He goes down to the minors. He's still hitting. But, you know, it's just right now, it is a dumpster fire.
Yeah, and it's just been utterly frustrating to watch, particularly, you know, a fan my whole life, you know, looking like the team's going to turn around this year. And something that we haven't mentioned, I know the hitting has been really most disappointing, looking at that 2.8 runs per game, but also, you know, the pitching, just watching Felix this year after he's been, you know, stalwart, you know, just workhorse for us. And again, another guy that I could just say is a shell of himself. Just looks like
Father Time looks like it's caught up to him. There's no question. And again, it's like, it's not the age, it's the innings. I mean, he's pitched so many innings and so many quality innings.
So many pitches on your arm. Every pitcher really only has so many pitches on their arm before that deteriorates, and it deteriorates quickly. And we've seen it time and time again with a lot of pitchers. I feel like, who was it for the San Francisco Giants? The workhorse for a long time brought them to the World Series in 2012. I believe that was right around the time Madison Baumgartner started to take over. I'm trying to remember his name. It's not coming to me at the time, but you know, you see it time and time again with pitchers when they work a certain amount of innings, there's just something happens to the fastball. It just becomes exponentially more
hitable. Exactly. I mean, you know, Felix is down in the 89 mile an hour range right now and hardly even throws the fastball.
One, is it a movement issue too? You know, obviously the velocity's not there, but it just looks like the batters are seeing it so much more easily. There's just got to be something there, and it's sad to watch. You know, it's just
no, it really is. And I mean, you'd have to admit it's like, and I can feel your pain, and you feel the pain around town of all the playoff non-playoff teams. If this is going to be a non-playoff season, this was the gut wrencher because this was the ultimate tease. You know, the fact that they jump out and they're sitting all those games, you know, 25 games above 500. I mean, this was the ultimate tease, and this one is going to be really, really hard to take. Hey, Warren, thank you for the phone call.
Of course. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Justin in Linwood. Hey, Justin.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
Doing good.
So I just had a question. So when players hold out, like, how much money do they lose per week? And, like, and I know at, like, the 10-week mark where they don't get their money and then their contract rolls over the next year. I was just curious, like, how much they lose.
Yeah, okay. Just to give you the format of how it goes, let's use Earl Thomas. Now, remember, it's going to be different for a guy that's in their first contracts or even in the option year of their contracts because, you know, they don't have enough vested right now to qualify for some stuff. But in the case of Earl Thomas, you know, he gets fined $40,000 a day. Okay. Then once you get to the fifth day that he misses, then you can go for 15% of his prorated signing bonus for the year, 15%. And then what happens after that is that you can then start to take, 1% per day. So he's already lost 25%. Which is basically of $1.9 million, so that's $475,000. So you tack that on. Then, of course, you know, the $8.5 million is his base salary. For each game that he misses, he loses 1/17. And again, I know it's 16 games, but again, the pay comes out over a 17-week period. So ultimately, I think is, you know, he can lose about $4 to $5 million bucks. Now, to he needs to be there by the 10th game, which is probably the 11th week, to at least get the final six games so his contract doesn't toll. So you know he's going to be there for the final six games at the very worst, and more than likely you would have to think he's going to be smart enough to want to come in for the first regular season game and not miss those paychecks. But, you know, it's up to the team to make a decision on whether they want to collect it or not. You know, like in the case of Khalil Mack, in the case of Aaron Donald, they probably won't take the fine money. You know, that probably won't happen. But in the case of Earl Thomas, like they did Cam Chancellor, they're going to keep the fine money. They're not going to give a break on that.
Yeah, that's just so crazy to just see him hold out because, you know, Earl's always been one of my favorite players, you know. So I'm just kind of like on the fence on it, like, how should I feel about it, you know? And I get it, you know, it's like players, they really don't last that long. And, you know, teams, they pay him money and stuff. But, you know, it doesn't last forever. So I can totally see where he's coming from. But it's just kind of confusing. Like, when he comes back, what happens?
It could be a distraction because I think what you can pretty well identify is that much like a couple of the guys who are no longer in the team, Earl doesn't buy into this team right now. He doesn't necessarily think it's a Super Bowl team. He wants to go to another team. You know, you can see that he's asked for the trade. He's not gotten the trade, and they can't talk contract for a guy that pretty much doesn't want to be here.
Yeah, it's just crazy to just see just all the exodus that we've had. But, you know, you always got to look towards the future because those players don't last forever, you know. And just
different were it not for this year, because this was a reset year both as far as personnel and mentality of this team. And Pete Carroll wanted to make sure that everybody that is going to be on this team is going to buy into this team so that they can maybe clean up some of the things that may have started to go astray the last couple of years. And now Earl is part of that by not being here. And again, it's like, does he deserve $13 million a year? Yes, he does. But the problem is, if you're not buying into this team, you can't get the $13 million from the team to Earl Thomas.
Yeah, and I just had one more thing. So if the punters. So are we still paying John Ryan? Is he still in a contract? Or, like, how's that going to work? Are we going to cut
him? He's still making $2.6 a year.
Oh, okay.
But again, it's so, like, if you cut him, then he gets nothing. I mean, you just have and so that you save money and all that.
Oh, I see. Okay. Huh. Well,
and right now, I know the holding is the only real issue. You know, it's looking pretty well set that Dixon's going to be the punter.
Yeah, like I said, I love
Ryan's not conceding. Good for him. But, I mean, when you punt like Dixon, this guy's ridiculous how good he is.
Yeah, right. No kidding. I'm actually really amazed to just see this guy's talent. It was totally worth the draft pick.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you for the phone call, Justin.
Yep.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. How's it going in L.A.?
Doing good. Good to be down here in L.A.
I got a question about DJ Fluker. Is he guaranteed to make the team? Because I've been hearing stories about him getting injured once in a while.
No, there's no guarantee. And that's where I think, you know, it was kind of a preview of what might be happening when you saw Marcus Smith cut yesterday. Because, you know, Marcus, everybody thought he was going to make the team. I mean, you know, he was pretty much like the fourth best pass rusher they had, or fourth or fifth best pass rusher they've had. And, you know, he got either something going on off the field and they let him go. And so, there's no guarantee. I mean, you know, what they have to just, cause remember, J.R. Sweezy is going to, start, practicing this coming week, and he'll compete for one of the, I mean, obviously the Fluker guard spot, and then they'll have to make a decision. And if there's going to be concern about, Fluker, you know, getting through 16 games, you know, at 343 pounds and having some leg injuries, you know, that could be problematic. So, no guarantee. And so really, I mean, when you start to look at the team itself, there's no guarantees on a lot of these spots. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the main guys are going to make it, but no, anything can happen in regards to that.
How about Jermaine Ifedi with the way he has with his penalty problems?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the problem is who can step up to take that job? I mean, you know, what they could take Ethan Posick and then move him back to tackle. I mean, that could be one and put Ifedi at guard, you know, but, they've not elected to do that. You know, I think you saw what they did last week. I mean, they opened up the competition. They have Isaiah Battle trying to be there, but then he ends up getting a knee injury. Then you get the, you know, Jamarco, Jones, their fifth round pick. You know, he had the problem with his, ankle. He got a high ankle sprain and a bad one. So you figure he's probably going to go on injured reserve. So now what you're left is Willie Beavers, who I don't think can beat out Ifedi, and, you know, maybe, Reese Odhiambo.
Okay. Thank you a lot, John.
All right, hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Don't forget the golf show will be following this show. Good to have them back. Let's go to Justin in Lake Taps. Hey, Justin.
How's it going, John?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I have a couple questions for you, actually.
Yeah.
The first one is, I don't know what you've thought about Felix recently, but I feel like he's pitched pretty well. I mean, he's definitely.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, he had a good game the other day, you know, coming off out of the bullpen to fill in for Paxton and going 5 2/3 innings. But then,
yeah,
when you see some of the other bad
after,
games that he's had, and an earned run average is closer to six.
Yeah. I mean, he had a good, six innings, I thought, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He went 5 2/3, yeah.
Yeah. And then I was wondering, too, do you think Chris Carson's going to be that man? Do you think he can reach a 1,000?
I think so. I honestly do. Had he stayed healthy, now again, staying healthy obviously is going to be the key to this. Had he stayed healthy, I think he would have had 1,000 yards last year. I think he looks that good. And now what you can see that, you know, he has worked so hard this offseason. You know, he's, you know, 228 pounds, 6.5% body fat. I mean, you can see he runs so well. He catches the ball so well. He's got, you know, both power and agility that I really like. I mean, you know, we're a lot of, you look at some of the fantasy projections in that, you know, a lot of thought that Rashard Penny was going to gain over 970 yards. I look at Carson right now. Carson has been better than Penny, and Penny has looked good. Now, of course, Penny's hurt. But, no, I think that Carson can gain 1,000 yards if he stays healthy.
I also think that Brandon Marshall has looked really impressive to me. I think that he could be a sleeper.
Agreed. No, I agree 100%. I think that, you know, what you like about him is that he's big, he's smart, he's physical, he gives you so many good things that, you know, can really work out well. And it's, and you can just in practice, I mean, he usually has one or two really impressive catches per day in practice. And when you start to see that, it's like, okay, I think he can really help. Agreed.
Yeah, I think he can really be just a sleeper that people just aren't looking out for. And, you know, people were saying that he wouldn't make the, even the team really. And I think that the opposite. I think that he can really help us out.
Yeah, I think he's legitimate competing for the number three, job right now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know the first two. It's going to be Doug Baldwin and it's going to be T.J. Lockett. But, I mean, is it going to be David Moore? Is it, you know, right now, Amara Darboh, he's kind of dropped. Marcus Johnson's starting to make a little bit of a run. But I'd say at the moment it's David Moore and Brandon Marshall going for the number three hole.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
But no, I like what I see with him. And again, he offers something different than the other guys, because, I mean, the other guys may not necessarily be big. I mean, yeah, I know that, you know, you got a couple guys with size. I mean, but Jaron Brown also looks real good too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's battling for that number three spot. So either, you know, Marshall and Brown and Moore, I think they're sitting there, you know, 3, 4, or 5, but they all look really good. And again, I like what I see at Marcus Johnson.
Well, I like Marshall, too, because he's that big body. I feel like, you know, you need that big, you know, person to, you know, step up and be able to make those end zone catches and whatnot.
Exactly. And, that, you know, it replaces some of the things they lost in Jimmy Graham.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at Brown. Brown's fast getting downfield. Marshall's just good in that short area. But, I mean, what he had to play the other day against Dante Johnson, where he just kind of knocked him down and then makes a great catch. I mean, he's making backhanded, back shoulder catches.
Yeah,
that looks good.
One-handed catches.
One-handed catches, yeah. No, I think that that could turn out to be a steal of a signing.
I completely agree. Well,
hey, thank you for the phone call,
Professor.
All right. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. And our thanks to you, the callers, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. What's up, John Clayton?
Everything good. Good to be down here in L.A.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. Good for you. Hey, look, great day for croquet, but let me start off with a shout-out to the memory and legacy of Aretha Franklin. Your sweet voice will live forever.
Ah.
God rest your sweet soul. And shout-out to the Fremont Coffee for having the RESPCT for the Queen of Soul to play song after song after song in her memory when I was there on Thursday. John Clayton, you're known as the professor of the NFL. We all love you for being a professor of music also. So if you would, a few words about Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul.
I mean, she was just amazing. It's like, you know, she was the equivalent as a woman singer to what James Brown was. I mean, she was just so, I mean, she just had the four octaves, that, I mean, the range of four, which is amazing. She sung everything so well. I mean, what I thought was great was Smokey Robinson was there talking about her. And I guess they've been friends since they were 8 years old. What they did in Detroit, I mean, they were Motown. They basically made Motown, and she did this. I mean, she was that good.
Yeah. You got that right, man. Rest in peace. Thank you, John Clayton. And John Clayton, speaking of one of the all-time greats, I have to mention one of the all-time great guys with the passing of Mark Long, owner of the Attic Ale House, a big-time hockey fan, and he's going to be missed by more people that can fill a hockey rink. And condolences to Mrs. Long and her family, as well as the Attic family. And John Clayton Long, remembering a guy I had a bunch of great sports conversations with, it reminds me of one I had yesterday with a random dude on the street after making a comment about his Mariners cap. And as it turns out, not only is he a John Clayton Show listener, he beat me in arm wrestling for the right to say he's a bigger Irish Minky fan. So if you ever take a call from the Mercer Island Hermit, it's Bob Leitner. And after talking with the Hermit about a range of Seattle sports topics, from the Dodgers in town to the Seahawks on the road and a bunch of stuff in between, we wound up giddy about Husky football 2018. And the best thing about being on the John Clayton Show this morning, we were a week closer to the Dogs taking the field on national TV, starting the season off as one of the top-ranked teams in the country. And while the Seahawks prepare for fake game number two, the Huskies are 2 weeks away from beginning a season that should restore the program to its formerly feared status as one of the dominating teams in all of college football. And to all the Husky football fans out there, the ride Coach Peterson has already taken us on has been unbelievable. But this season, buckle up tightly. And lastly, John Clayton, from purple to blue, there's Blue Friday, there's Royal Blue, and then when you fly over the ocean, it's nothing but blue. But there just isn't anything sweeter than Dodger blue. And I suppose the opposite of that would be the blues the Mariner fans were singing last night after the Dodgers bats spanked the ball until it was black and blue. And you know I don't give a rip about baseball, John Clayton, but I grew up a Dodgers fan, and for my great-grandmother, who told me stories about Don Newcomb and Pee Wee Reese, and of course number 42, not to mention being from Tacoma and swelling with pride every time an announcer said Ron Say, anytime the Dodgers come to town and get the party started by scoring a touchdown and two safeties in Safeco Field, I'm going to mention it on the John Clayton Show, much to the chagrin of all my Mariner buddies. My best to Mrs. Clayton. Talk to you next week, John Clayton.
Okay, Commando, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jamie in Seattle. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, John. I never thought I'd ever call you up and ask your opinion on the kicking game for the Seahawks. But I really think that, you know, if it's the fact they've got two punters, they got John Ryan and the guy that got in the fifth round there, they're not going to give up that fifth round pick. So do you think they should keep John Ryan because he's really good at extra points for holding where the other guy is not? And
I would right now, and listen, John has been a kicker that has been good for this team for so long, so valuable. But no, I would go with Michael Dixon. He offers you something that I've never really seen. I mean, I know he is an Australian. Got the, you know, the Australian style. But when you watch the game last week and you see him kick three kicks, averaging 50 yards a punt. Then the ball comes down with such a knuckleball type of delivery that it's, you know, two times it hit the ground. I mean, I've never seen that. And you watch it in practice. I mean, he gives you the idea if you want a pooch kick, you can do that. I mean, he is a rare punter. He's a rare talent. And to get that in the fifth round, remember, they were worried because, remember, three punters went in that fifth round, and he was the first of the three. I think they were worried that Oakland was going to take him because they ended up taking a punter. This guy is really good. And, you know, he's all, you know, to show you how rare he is, I mean, he can stand on his left leg, right? Lift his right leg up. Just hold the ball in his foot area on his shoe and kick it 55 yards. I've never seen anybody do that.
He's amazing. I totally agree with you on that. And I think that you know, if they want to trade Ryan or drop him, you know, that you're probably not going to get very much for him, although he's been incredible to our team. The other piece is with Janikowski and the other kicker, since our kicking game
right.
has been really bad, from last year, et cetera. I really love Janikowski. I've always loved him since he played at Florida State, but the fact is he's old, so
right,
should we keep both kickers?
When you can't keep both kickers, no. I mean, particularly, I mean, it's like, are you going to give up one of the running backs, one of the wide receivers, one of the defensive ends? No, you can't keep two kickers. That's, I mean, again, some teams hang, but no, I think that it'll come down to, you know, one of the two, and Sebastian, I think, has the edge. I mean, there's guarantees in his contract, and he's got the track record, but right now, I mean, anything can happen. Jason Myers has done very well. I've not seen this guy miss a kick in any of the practices or any of the games that I've covered. So, you know, odds are going to go with Janikowski. He's the special teams coach who's been with him in Oakland, so you know there's a good relationship there, and he still looks good. You worry about the hip, you worry about the age. Hey, Jamie, thank you for the phone call, and thank everybody for the phone calls. And again, we will be back on Monday. Coming up next, the Golf Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.